This is the Media Freak Podcast. It's the latest and greatest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs, we're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a quick roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis. Jack from Craft.
Hoi hoi.
Ricky from Waymaker.
What up?
And Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello.
How are you, gang? What's new?
Pretty good. We're so back.
We are back. Whoop whoop.
It's been a minute.
It has been a minute. It's season two. And it's been a while since you last heard from any of us. So I'd like to say that we'd had a break, but there's no such thing in our industry, is there?
Absolutely not. And what's really weird is there's been, seemingly whilst we've been off, there's been an unbelievable amount of change and news and weird shit going down.
There really has. And it's
I would actually say to the point that even if the times when we have gone to record, by the next day, it's literally obsolete. Everything's changed again.
Literally. Yeah. Well, some of this stuff we'll address today. And we do aim to get back to our usual regularity of episodes soon. So bear with us and stay tuned. In today's episode, we discuss ads on WhatsApp, new broadcaster partnerships, and discuss the biggest shakeup of the industry this year. So, let's get into it. In the CTV landscape, the broadcasters strike back. Sky, ITV and Channel 4 are reportedly joining forces to fight back against Google and Meta's dominance in the UK ad market. The Guardian reports that Sky, ITV and Channel 4 are creating a single self-serve platform where small and medium-sized businesses can buy ad space across all three streaming services. They're also planning a streamlined buying system for agencies. So have you guys heard about this?
Yeah, they've actually been sort of talking about a lot of the new tools they're releasing recently. And I think it's a good thing that they're going to try and talk to that kind of larger end of the small business, cohort sector, because they're the ones that are kind of the most hesitant about going into TV and AV more generally, when ironically it could probably be the most powerful for them in helping the business grow.
Yeah, I mean, Meta and Google control, 2/3 of the entire UK digital ad spend? And a big part of that is through that, the really user-friendly, low-cost, low-entry, low-friction capabilities that they offer. And traditionally, as we know, linear TV has been very difficult to get into. You know, you have to record an ad, you have to have actors in there or animators. There are so many overheads in here and, not foregoing the actual CPM as well. I did know that at least one of the broadcasters had a thing before where they would pay for half of the ad to be produced. The SME would put up 50%, Sky or ITV, whoever it was, would put up the other half, and then they'd only start paying that back once the sales eclipsed the sort of threshold of where you can reasonably say that the ad had made a difference, which was, again, lowered that barrier to entry.
We did that for Kraft with Abbott Lion, the sort of like 50-50 deal where you get that 50% of value on top, and it means that your first campaign really packs a punch. But there's quite a few different incentives in there. But I think this new kind of collaboration across broadcasters will really kind of help to open that door even further for more brands.
So the first thing that I wanted to call out on this really quickly was the article that we were kind of referencing really called this a fight back or strike back by the broadcasters, where I think personally it's really giving like a slow rate of adaptation. Like, they've needed to do this for a long time. They're finally getting around to it, and now we're kind of like heralding it as, yay, you managed it, but it's taken them a long, long time. I think they also kind of cited YouTube as one of the social platforms that they're fighting back against, when actually this isn't that at all. I think YouTube is one of the ones that's helped them stay relevant. So I'm not really sure exactly to what extent they're going to fight back, because they are still going to have to collaborate. And then finally on this is, I think that, because actually, Harry, you just said that it's theirs across their streaming platforms. So actually, yeah, even though it might be you know, things that can be consumed linearly, but it is across streaming. So I really wonder how smart it is to make your own platform instead of collaborating with someone like a Trade Desk, who is already being able to kind of serve, who already has a user experience that, you know, planners and activators know how to use. So I would like to see that from this. And I think it would then allow them to combine the stuff that they're doing across TV with the stuff that they could possibly also be doing with the likes of YouTube and buy it all in kind of one place. So I don't know. I think it's the right move, but I think there could be some tweaks they could make to actually make this really fly off the shelves.
I reckon that we will see more of that integration with their YouTube properties as part of this, because if they're smart, they'll have it kind of across each of their different verticals. I can't see how they'd do it with linear without kind of going into more traditional buying routes, but it would make sense that they integrate it with those new kind of YouTube collaborations that they've been running for a few months, years now. So
to summarize our collective point of view on this, we're saying that they're responding to TV ad revenue decline a little late in the day, but it is a good move ultimately, and it will continue to evolve. Very good.
It must continue to evolve.
It must. Well, in other CTV news, Disney and Amazon are strengthening their advertising partnership. So advertisers can now buy inventory across Disney Plus, Hulu and ESPN via Amazon's ad platform. In other words, using Amazon's DSP can directly access Disney's full streaming portfolio. Now, data integration is quite a significant factor here, because Amazon's data can be ultimately combined with Disney's audience segments for much more advanced targeting. Now, as you know, Amazon was already selling out inventory for Disney through programmatic channels, but by doing this, it provides more of a unified way to run ads across connected TV. So, Jack, I know you may have a point of view on this.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think it's interesting because of the ability to, I guess, like, connect everything up from, you know, Amazon's wealth of data right the way through to the quality of content that Disney provides. And Amazon still provides, like, good quality content, but it doesn't have that strength of franchise that, you know, that Disney do. And they kind of seem to be going from strength to strength with the content they're producing. So I think from a comms planning perspective, it's very appealing. And also it's just kind of, it's quite nice to see sort of a bit of, what's the opposite of fragmentation?
Consolidation.
A bit of consolidation. Well done, guys. Great team effort.
I don't know what word I was saying then. Consolidation.
But yeah, I think it can only be a good thing, right?
Yeah, they've been busy, haven't they? Because they've also done that deal with, or Amazon, sorry, have been with Roku. I think they kind of announced it at the same time, right? Which is, but again, it's sort of, they've already been working together. Now they've just solidified it, but they're ending up with some really significant pools of people.
Okay, cool. So in social news, Meta has announced the introduction of new ad features in WhatsApp. So does anyone know what these features are?
Isn't it? So there's like, I mean, I've never been on any of the buttons at the bottom of WhatsApp, but apparently there's a button called updates and it's like stories, like in Instagram. I should probably have looked this up before the call, but
good news is you're right. There's a section called updates in a separate tab at the bottom of the app alongside the communities and calls buttons. So
I've only ever got there by mistake. Like if I'm trying to like go back off my phone and I've got there, and I think it threw me once because someone I knew had a story and I was like, what is going on here? And it had like their name, someone random in my contacts, and it was like, here's a story. And I was like, whoa. So that's the only way I've ever visited that tab.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of, obviously what WhatsApp is, the whole sort of shtick behind it is that it's super privacy focused and yada yada. So the ads aren't going to be in your chats, they're not going to take any data from that chat. It's all only going to be on that updates page, which is like the business side of things. But it'll be interesting to see, given that I had no idea that that button existed, and I don't think any of us here did. How do they then drag users? How do they drag businesses into that? How do they, you know, get that into the public mind? Because clearly, they spent nearly $20 billion acquiring WhatsApp and their user base. And so far, I imagine that hasn't had the greatest ROI in terms of pure ad revenue. I'm sure there are a million other things that they're utilizing it for. But yeah, it'll be cool to see how are they going to incentivize people to get there.
Do you think small businesses will find value in promoting within WhatsApp, or do you think it will mostly benefit larger advertisers?
It's got to be small businesses, hasn't it? There's a definite appeal for local places that you kind of trust. But I think there's almost a missed opportunity with this, just because I've run a WhatsApp campaign before, but it was in India for Formula E. They had a race in Hyderabad, and we produced loads of like sponsored stickers, which were kind of designed to be shared quite widely. And those obviously sit within the chat, but you create them in such a way that they kind of people decide to use them themselves. So it's almost like a kind of a paid earned media, if you like. But I just think it's interesting because, like, I would have thought they would have opened up their like their GIF responses or something like that, that you can create sponsored GIFs. And then if you've, you know, branded GIFs, if you then kind of create stuff that's good enough and strong enough and works with the platform, then that would actually be want to be used instead of something tucked away in a little button that people don't really tend to press as much.
I wonder if that eroded a little bit of trust in, I'm sure they've done several tests, but when people, because we're, again, going at the privacy point, you assume that all those buttons and words and letters that you press are encrypted and private. Then if you suddenly see a brand in there, you're like, oh, hold on a minute, is that private? Are they seeing something? So I don't know, maybe the A/B tested it and realized that let's keep it out of that button and on the button that no one actually looks at.
Quite possibly. I mean, I think they'll probably sell it as like a sort of a run of Meta type thing when you sort of let them make all the decisions for you and sort of say 18 plus, let it rip. But, you know, we'll see.
Very good. Well, anyway, in the MarTech landscape, we'd like to talk to you about Alchemy Network. Now, Alchemy is an innovation consultancy that's changing the game when it comes to marketing and ad tech. Alchemy works with over 550 global brands and agencies, distilling the overwhelming world of tech into tailored time-saving sessions that just cut through the noise. They're a brilliant partner, whether you've got a brief to crack or if you just want to stay sharp on what's next in our industry. So if you're curious and you'd like to learn more, reach out to hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out. So Jack, I know you have used Alchemy before, right?
Yeah, so they come in on a sort of quarterly basis, and they sort of curate four different ad tech partners. And obviously for Kraft, we're planning and strategy focused. So it often tends to veer into quite a different direction than it probably would to if we were an agency that buys media. And you said about the kind of overwhelming world of ad tech. I do find it quite overwhelming because it is. There's always something new, and I feel perpetually like I'm behind the curve. So these sessions are quite useful because I'm not sort of taking out a whole 45-minute chunk of my diary to speak to someone who might not be relevant. It's an hour, but I get to speak to four different ones, and chances are one or two of them are going to be people that we ended up sort of working with as we move forward. So yeah, really, really good. And they're lovely folks as well, which is always nice.
And Charlie, you've worked with Alchemy on the other side, right?
Yeah, as part of the overwhelming ad tech landscape, it has been useful. So we had a session the other day with an agency, but it was useful. So what Jack mentioned, where you have the sort of four people, four ad tech partners come and present, they'll only do that if there is no sort of conflict of interest between them. And then you can hear the other side of the pitch. Like, for instance, you know, we're a media owner, there might be a measurement partner on there, and it's quite interesting to hear them. But in the session that we had, because there was a conflict of interest, we were sort of put into blind rooms, and then you present one by one. So it was good to see that they take note of the fact that sometimes there is going to be a clash, sometimes they won't. But in either way, it works really well.
So you're in a sort of an ad tech Royal Rumble.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, clearly, obviously came out on top, but you know.
Obviously.
Yeah, king of the ring, baby.
Well, that wraps up our news this week. Remember, you can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us. It's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. Now, onto our main topic. So this year, the network agency ecosystem has been navigating a period of significant change marked by AI disruption, shifting workplace norms, and increasing pressure to prove value across global holding companies. Now, nowhere has this been more visible than at WPP, which has experienced a cascade of high-profile developments over the last year, from major client losses, structural overhauls, to bold AI investments, and more recently, leadership changes. WPP's trajectory reflects both the turbulence and transformation facing the industry. So there's so much that has happened, and we thought it would be useful for our listeners to give a bit of a timeline on how the story has unfolded. Now, team, feel free to jump in here with your views on what happened and when. But it started in January of this year, where it was announced that WPP would enforce a four-day in-office work policy starting in April. So obviously that had mixed reviews.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time I predicted that it was a sort of a way of getting people to jump ship to try and get the workforce numbers down a bit. And I feel like I might be a little bit vindicated in that prediction now.
Quite right. Well, fast forward to March of this year, and WPP then loses the Coca-Cola media account in North America, which was big news, where its media planning and buying moved to Publicis, which, of course, we've reported on a lot in our podcast, given Publicis growth over the last year or two. Then we move to April, and WPP enforces that four-day in-work office policy, which sparked controversy not only at WPP, but across the industry. It made national headlines, didn't it?
So yeah, it did spark petitions, and I think it did get onto, like, that's the problem. This year has been the first time I've seen us really be in, like, mainstream news. Like, we see us all over the trade press, but actually getting into, like, proper press for stuff like this has been a bit nuts. I mean, they say all press is good press, but we'll see. But I think, that enforcement was a little bit tough. There was a lot of chat about, especially in the States, it being, you know, every man, woman and dog for themselves in the office, any space. So I think you take from it what you think in terms of how it landed culturally.
Yeah. Well, also in April, there was more announcements in the trade press of WPP then acquiring InfoSum, which was a major investment in WPP's AI-driven capabilities. Then, fast forward...
I was just going to say, it's kind of closing the door after the horse is bolted sort of vibes, wasn't it? Because Publicis' data story has been the thing that's been kind of luring clients over. And that they kind of sell those kind of like enormous clients the big data dream. And I think that their story was just a little bit more advanced than what I've heard that the WPP story was. Is that fair, Brooks?
I mean, from, and I will say on this particular pod, all views my own. I will say that you're kind of right, Jack, in terms of what we're kind of seeing now from the different holding companies is where they're really hedging their bets. So as you say, Jack, Publicis have been hedging their bets in kind of data, commerce, and like people for a long, long time. And we are kind of attaching our cart to this AI thing. I think the acquisition of InfoSum was essentially to firstly bolster what we could call our AI proposition. Whether or not that is the exact way that we're going to see the best way to do this, we'll see. I think we kind of already said, you know, things are manifesting in, you know, the clients doing what they're doing. So whether or not that is the right horse to attach carriage to, we'll see.
Well, obviously it was described as a major investment. And then in May, we find out that the Group M brand had been dropped. And WPP announces the end of the name in a huge restructure aimed at allegedly simplifying media operations. And then, go on, Boots.
Oh, here we go.
I was just thinking. So, like, you know, like when, like in politics and stuff, and they're like doing some madness, and then all of a sudden they'll just like be like, oh, and we're going to rename all of the overground stations, all the lines. We're going to do that. Like, yeah, how much of that, like between us, is giving currently like a bit of smoke and mirrors? We're going to do something.
Dead cat theory, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely useless. We're going to do something just because you didn't even drop the brand. You just changed the name. Like, nothing's changed really, all you did was change the name of us.
I think clearly there is, I think turmoil is probably a fair word to use, right? With the massive losses, and I think, Harriet, you'll probably touch on a couple of the other ones with sort of Mars and Coca-Cola in the US anyway, and several more. There really is a time where you need to go, all right, look, we've kind of clearly, senior leadership have taken you down the wrong path, right? It's not worked out, and there is a bit of a need to like, get back into the cyclical nature of, okay, we're done for now. We need to go back, right, strip the company down a little bit. Fuck it, let's change the name. Let's change the way that we operate. We'll streamline it. Let's do well with the clients we have, and let's try and get back in 5, 7, 10 years and kind of accept the failings that have happened. I mean, it's as a, you know, business leader, you literally have to lead. Unfortunately, that hasn't worked in a Mark Reed shaped left
you're
a Mark Reed shaped hole.
You're ruining the timeline, Charlie.
Oh no, he's jumped ahead of the timeline.
Missive.
Thanks for summarising anyway. So we've obviously spoke about the group M brand dropping. Then in May, layoffs followed that restructure, and we find out that additional job cuts are announced across all of WPP's agencies, only days really after the group M rebrand. Then, as you've quite rightly stated, Charlie, then in June, it was announced that Mark Reed, the CEO of WPP, is going to step down as CEO by the end of this year after 30 years in the company. And then in June, WPP loses Mars, which is another major blow, with it being one of the biggest accounts of the business. And who did they lose it to? Publicis yet again. And then a week later, which is the newest news to date, TikTok, an AI tool was announced, an integration with an AI tool and TikTok. And I think it's called Symphony, which is being integrated into WPP's open platform. I don't know how much you know about this, Buki, or what's being discussed internally about that.
We kind of got the news same time as you.
Okay. I sounds mean, like the similar vibe it's been all year, right?
That's the world turns, and in agency communication internally is bad. That's just it's the same in like even in little agencies, like that no one knows exactly how much to say because you can't tell everyone everything. But I mean, it does sound like there has been a lot of confusion with it. I mean, the thing that's having like sort of dwelled on this and sort of watched it unfold, and also hearing kind of how it was sort of spoken about at South by Southwest in London the other week, there's been it's this kind of idea that, yeah, super fast. You can just kind of get to an answer immediately. You client requests something and you can just bosh it straight through Open AI and WPP Open, and it will get you through to like, you know, a plan in seconds or like insights in seconds or whatever. But there's not any sort of like emphasis on, you know, taking a moment to figure out like if it's the right thing for the client, like if what they're asking you to do is the right thing. I only say this because in the South by Southwest example that was shown, I know that the person in the video was getting asked questions by the client, and she was just like, "Yeah, I've got you the answer before I've even got back to my desk." And it's like, in that example,
what?
No one's kind
Come
of stopped.
Come on now, where are the times of, I'll check with the team, we'll get back to you on that. Come on. That's a staple of the industry. Yeah, I'll just double check that and we'll get back. Doesn't need to be immediate.
Or just taking a little bit of time to kind of to work out if the client's asking me about like a Halloween themed activation because their boss has said that their daughter's seen something on TikTok and they want to then turn that into a campaign for them. Someone should be asked, before you even get through to doing all the work, you should be asking, like, is that the right thing for this client? Is that what they need compared to everything else they're doing? But
well, that's
my concern is that we're going to end up with in a situation where we're just kind of, a client's going to turn around and say, why do I need the person operating the AI? Why can't I just ask WPP Open myself? And then you're in a situation.
I won't be surprised if that's where we're going.
Well, it would save, like for big networks, that's how they're going to save a lot of money, is by reducing headcount. But, you know, I don't think you're going to get to the sort of truly inspiring and incredible like work that properly drives change for brands without a human influence in there, because otherwise you'll just end up kind of at a bit of a cookie cutter point with it. I'm sure AI will get more advanced on that front, but like I think without talent, an agency is going to start sort of losing its edge. And those agencies that do focus on talent and focus on doing what's right for their clients and kind of engaging with the proper audience analysis that needs to be done will start to slip, get ahead in the long run.
So just to conclude then, because obviously a lot of well, mostly negative news has been in the headlines about
it's
WPP.
Scary.
It really is. So what do you think the general feeling is across the industry about the future of media as a whole?
I reckon it's the time for the indies to shine. Jack, baby, you're up.
Thanks, Books. I mean, I hope it is, not from a self-serving perspective, but just because I think that there are a lot of brilliant people and a lot of brilliant talent in indie agencies that are trying to make a difference, that don't have access to the same level of AI tools and stuff. I mean, we use AI a lot at Kraft, but I think it's how you get your good people using those tools to make themselves better rather than using it to replace them. Because I'm not going to lie, I've been in the industry, 12 years now? And Jesus, that makes me sound old. But it's quite scary. We're hiring people into Kraft at the moment, and there are a lot of people out there with a lot of experience who have been laid off from big agencies because they're deemed sort of surplus to requirements. And that's quite scary, to be honest with you. So yeah, I mean, it's a brave new world.
Yeah. And we send our thoughts out to anyone that's been affected by
Absolutely.
The WPP restructure and across other agencies. So yeah, we're here for you. Right into Media Anon. maybe don't put that in, please.
Definitely do put that in. Right well, into actually, Media
yeah,
Anon.
To be honest,
I'm trying
you.
To hear what they're saying.
Media Anon would be a good place for people to sort of air their grievances, I
yeah,
would say.
Spill the beans anonymously.
Yeah, if you just want to
don't care about your NDAs.
Scream yeah. into our void.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that wraps up our conversations this week. Thank you so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe and tell all your friends. We'll be back soon, hopefully in an exciting location right in the heart of the media scene. So stay tuned. And Media Anon will return next week, as well as Freak of the Week, our favourite story. Do keep your stories coming in. And huge thanks to Alchemy Network as our long-term commercial partner. See you next time.